Hello and welcome to episode 143 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. China has a new technological marvel it has been testing and rolling out in the last year or two, their social credit system. We're going to be talking about exactly what it is, what it does, and what the implications are for both normal citizens of China, but also for the Christians who live in China. Leading this week's discussion is Ryan Tankersley, and joining us for discussion is Craig Ellis and David McCookie. I'm Derek Mast. Let's get into it.
So this is a new thing that it is official in 30 cities so far and will be rolled out by 2020. And it is essentially China's way of ranking all of its 1.4 billion citizens. So each citizen in China, they now have a score, kind of like, you know, a normal credit score, but not just regarding your finances, but regarding your entire life, how trustworthy of a citizen you are. So they attempt to determine a social rating for the people, and the ratings are determined by people's behavior. For instance, to increase your rating, you know, you don't do anything illegal, pay your taxes and bills, help clean up the streets, help people in general, buy things that responsible people buy. And all of these things are monitored on the 200 million cameras that are watching everybody at every moment with facial recognition. And then to lower your score, you do kind of the opposite. You do illegal actions. You can be smoking on the train, you can drive poorly or jaywalk, or buy too much alcohol, or even if you choose to spend time with or date or marry people with low scores, that will bring you down. And of course,
some of those aren't illegal though, right? Like buying too much alcohol is not technically illegal. It's just that it's seen as something that someone with an alcohol addiction might do, and therefore you're probably a less trustworthy person.
Yep, exactly. And and of course, if you are speaking out against the system or speaking out against government officials, those are some big things that will lower your score and show you as an untrustworthy person. And so there are ratings currently in the current system. It's in the prototype stage. As I said, 30 cities are currently prototyping this. There's a rating all the way from D to AAA for both people and companies. They both get a rating. And so if you're good, if you have a good rating, some of your benefits will be you pay cheaper bills, you get good health care, and you get to go to the best, your families get to go to the best schools, like your children. You can get bank loans easily, get nice hotels, and even the highest ranking citizens of the city, their pictures are posted in order of rank. Whereas if you're in the bad category, you know, in the very worst case, they stole a guy's passport for the next 10 years. So he can't travel at all. You can't get the loans or the health or good health care. They'll post shameful videos of you like jaywalking. And even police officers are equipped with, like, to me, it looked like a Dragon Ball Z visor, like a little thing that goes over their eye and shows everybody's, instead of power level, their social credit ranking. And so, you know, they're more likely to be like, oh, this guy has a low score. Maybe I should talk to him, find out what he's doing. And so, yeah, just to end, these are a couple of quotes from the guy who was maybe in charge of this program, and just a couple of quotes that that stood out as far as his purpose behind it. He said they wanted to create a system of punishment based on a scientific theory, and these punishments will serve as a whip to rebuild moral values. And so his hope is that in a country of 1.4 billion people, this automated system of reward and punishment will help rebuild the moral values of the society as a whole. So that's kind of where it's at right now. If anybody wants to chime in some of the interesting things they found in their research or share what your all's initial thoughts are on it, go ahead.
I thought it was interesting. One of the articles I read, which was on the Australian ABC website, was basically profiling two different people. I think you read this one as well, Tank. And one of them was saying she was quite happy with the system, probably because she's got a good rating, and so does her husband. And the other one was saying he was quite he was a journalist, so he had a reasonably, you know, decent job. He wasn't sort of, I guess, of the lowest class of people in terms of occupation, but he's been sort of singled out by the government, in his opinion, as being one of these people who's not in the more trustworthy category. And I can't remember exactly what that was for, but it was interesting to hear that the girl who is sort of all for the new system, she sort of thinks, I guess she's sort of swallowed the message about it being for safety reasons, right? Like, if the government's keeping a closer eye on people, then it'll increase public safety, and that's a good thing. And so she's kind of keen on it for those reasons. I think it wasn't like, reading through the article, it wasn't surprising to me, because it just seems like a sort of standard next step for a totalitarian government of any sort. You know, like, they're already wanting centralized control of everything, being a, you know, a communist nation. So, you know, having lots of, history of that in the past as well. So to sort of, to then use technology for the purpose of monitoring as much as they possibly can on all their citizens, and then rank, even going to the effort of ranking them accordingly, isn't that surprising? But it's terrifying. Like, as in, you know, the idea that, so let's take the alcohol example, buying alcohol. My first thought was, what if she's having a party? Like, what if she's having lots of people come to her house to celebrate, I don't know, an engagement or something like that. And, but she's seen as a not as trustworthy person because she's doing something that actually could be quite legitimate. You know, it's not that she's an alcoholic. She's just buying for a particular purpose, which requires more than the normal spend that you would see at a supermarket. So, I just think, you know, the system is flawed, obviously. And then there's all the concerns around privacy and, you know, should governments be having this much control and all that kind of thing, which I think we'd probably all be on the same page about. But it was interesting to hear from the two different sides and see that some people are kind of, you know, yes, this is actually for the common good, and they sort of have that centralized mentality, or, as well as following what the government's doing. And then there's other people who are saying, this is so restrictive of my personal freedoms that there's no way that this can be a good thing.
The other guy was an investigative journalist who has exposed some fraud and bad practice in the government. And so that immediately put him at a low.
Speaking against the government. Yeah. But they also mentioned in that same article that even being in the room with someone who speaks against the government can lower your ranking by association. And I mean, like, it's just, you know, you go to a party for Chinese New Year or something, and some crazy uncle says something negative about the government, and your points drop for that. Like, it's just, you know, I don't know. Maybe that isn't a reality, but if it is, it's obviously, it just seems like, you know, the system is too sensitive, and, you know, it can't possibly take into account what's going on in people's brains and that kind of thing accurately. And so I just think it's, yeah, there's so many problems with it.
I was actually surprised when reading the article, watching the video, about how the reporting on it portrayed the Chinese population as being so, like, relatively ambivalent or supportive of the system, which just goes to show how different the mentality is over in China from standing as someone from America, where, you know, freedom or death, blah, 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 you know, all all that stuff.
Blah, 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 yeah.
Blah, 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 you know, the relatively important things of the nation.
It's in the Constitution.
So that was just interesting to see from my perspective, to get that and, you know, kind of chew on that a little bit, on as how people's perspectives are different.
And I think we've covered that somewhere before when we've talked about, you know, privacy versus safety, I think came up at one stage. Like,
yeah, that does sound familiar.
There seems to be a bit of a balancing act. You know, some people are way more keen to have privacy, and usually those people are the same, or seem to be the same people who are all about personal freedoms and libertarianism type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got other people who are, so I don't want to get into the topic, but I think it came up around the time of the Australian gun laws compared to the American gun laws.
Oh, okay.
Which,
yeah,
you know, I'm all for the Australian gun laws and the fact that government stepped in there, but all my American friends are like, how dare they? That can't be a good thing, and all this kind of thing. So I think that sort of dichotomy is an interesting one.
I fell down a Wikipedia rabbit hole on
this
one.
Fine.
because I went to Wikipedia for this and, you know, looking for an unbiased source. And I clicked on the link that said reputation system because I was trying to understand kind of the broader principle, if this has been done before, that sort of thing. And I didn't find any examples in governments, but I found they listed eBay, they listed Reddit, they listed Yelp as examples of reputation systems. And I thought that was kind of interesting because what you have there is companies deciding, okay, we are providing a service and these users use the service and we're going to provide some sort of a system for making sure that the service is good so that the users can kind of punish or reward people within the system and the system becomes what the users want it to be. And I just thought it was interesting how you do that on a micro scale and like it's annoying that one bad experience can get you bad eBay feedback, but it kind of makes sense. But it's kind of crazy that a government would step in and do this on a broader scale where like when I go to the store and I buy a little bit of extra alcohol because I've had a hard week and maybe that happens 3 weeks in a row. I think the video that was linked to said that maybe she's a little too dependent on it. Not that she's an alcoholic, not that she's getting drunk all the time, but maybe she's a little too dependent on it. Like, mm-hmm. Well, who's that a sin against? Like that might be a sin against my neighbor. Maybe my neighbor will notice. It might be a sin against God, depending on the degree. But China is stepping in and saying this is a sin against the state.
Yeah. And it's also a judgment call, like how much is too much and all that kind of thing. You know, how do you, I don't know, different people will have different opinions on that. So how does the government have one rule as to, you know, for all people, this is the standard. I don't know.
I'm actually really fascinated about this whole thing of, you know, a countrywide government run social credit system. Like it's the kind of thing that I have a little bit of, like, I have morbid curiosity about, where I want to go in and, like, watch people, like, manage this thing and see how the sausage gets made and see if it, how accurate it is.
Your rank just dropped by 10 points.
But, but it is utterly terrifying. Our sponsor this week is Missionalware, your Reformed theology gift shop. So Missionalware strives to create a wide range of theology-inspired products with beautiful designs on stuff like beer glasses, insulated tumblers, posters, journals, ton of stuff. But we have a new product to talk to you about, and that is their new theologian statues. These are busts of Spurgeon, Calvin, Edwards, and Luther in bronze. And they are really cool looking. You can go check this out on Kickstarter. There will be a link in the show notes if you're into that. But you should check these out if you have any interest in that sort of thing. And this is just one more thing in their impressive library of designs and items that will appeal to any theologian. Check them out at missionalware.com. And to get on that theologian statue Kickstarter, check that link in our show notes for more details. Thanks to Missionalware for sponsoring this week of Tech Reformation.
I don't know if you guys know much about what's been going on in China recently. Yeah, they're actually really stepping up like the persecution against Christians. And so we think David mentioned, you know, China is deciding what is a sin and what is not. And if China is not, the Chinese government is against Christianity, sins are, the definition of sin is going to be much different than what God's definition of sin is. And so anyway, at the same time as this system is coming in place, there's also coming this new wave of persecution against Christians where I know missionaries are getting kicked out. I know many, many churches are getting shut down. People are going to jail. In this report that we have linked to says that this was in August. So last month was July. Half a dozen Christians were sentenced to 7 years in jail. And another was sentenced to 13 years in jail. And so churches are being destroyed. And yeah, as we look at this, these two things in tandem, It becomes a lot harder to look at this and think like, oh, this will be an interesting experiment that's being done in this huge country. I wonder how it'll go, to realizing that, it could be a really bad thing for the Christians of this country who are suddenly all going to have an extremely low credit score, social credit score. Mm-hmm. And they have to decide, is Jesus worth my score being extremely low and a lot of my freedoms, including my freedom to travel and get loans and go to good schools and healthcare removed. That just made this a little bit more real and hit home a little bit more for me. I was wondering, what are your guys' thoughts on just that situation for Christians under this future social credit score?
It's interesting how these both are kind of happening at the same time. It's like, I think there was an article that referenced the fact that China kind of opened up to the world in the 1980s, and now they're trying to kind of secure control over the country again with these various efforts.
Is there a new leader? Is there a new president? I haven't really followed their politics.
Yeah, there is. I don't know how long he's been up, but President Xi? Yeah, President Xi, XI.
The one that looks like Winnie the Pooh?
Your score just dropped.
Are we allowed to say that?
We're in America. You can't do anything about it. I hope nobody in China listens to this.
There's tiny little chips in your computer. Yeah. That may or may not be there.
Yeah, we're not going there. There's no truth
to that.
How
does he look like Winnie the Pooh?
It's a whole thing. Go look it up.
I am. Anyway, sorry.
I guess this is just bringing it back to politics is just an observation, but it does seem like both of these things are happening purposely in tandem in order to, you know, bring up the moral level of the country to a place where the party deems is adequate, which obviously they would see Christianity as a threat to that. So, yeah.
Guys, I just don't see it. I'm looking at the side by, because there's tons of side, Google image search, tons of side by side comparisons. And I just don't see it.
It's a little bit of the cheeks.
Oh. Yeah, well, I mean, so on the topic of persecution, I think, Tank, I think you posed the sort of idea that it may come to a situation where Chinese Christians will need to sort of decide for themselves, is it worth continuing to live as a Christian in China in a way that is as public as they can, or will the idea of needing to sort of get by in life and be able to get healthcare and all that kind of thing win out, which is a sad situation to be in, obviously. My thinking initially went straight to James 1, where it says, count it all joy when you meet trials of various kinds. And there's other places where it says, you're blessed if people persecute you. But I think when you start taking away, it's so easy to say, obviously the right answer is you would still live as a Christian because that's what you are and that's where your identity lies. And that needs to come before your nationality or your allegiance to your government or any of those things. I hope that would be the case for all of us. I do feel like, though, that there's a level of empathy rising in me that I wonder how, like, it must just get so hard when, taking away loans is one thing, but taking away such basic things as healthcare if you can't care for your family when they're sick, if you've got a sick child or something like that, and you can't get them appropriate medical attention because you've been ranked by the government as not valid for that, not able to access that, then, how far can you push people until they snap? And that's where, obviously, I think, there is a strength there for believers that only God can supply in the face of that kind of persecution or worse. You know, we're talking like in some countries, it gets to the stage of life or death, will you renounce Jesus? And if not, we're going to kill you kind of thing. those are the situations where it seems that there is only one, you know, it's clear in those situations where someone's faith truly lies. And that is not a thing to take lightly at all. But I guess my prayer for believers in China would be that that they would be living, like I said, in the strength that God supplies, knowing that He is He is everything they need, and what the government can impose on them doesn't outweigh what is waiting for them, you know, if they remain faithful, basically, which is something that, you know, God is at work in us to preserve us and persevere our faith anyway. So it's a super difficult situation, not one that we would wish anyone to be in, particularly if it goes even more into a sort of harsh system than it already is, beyond sort of credit ratings and things like that. But yeah, I guess that was my sort of thinking along those lines of persecution. You know, the initial reaction was, yeah, you know, well, the right answer is just keep doing what you're doing, and let the government do what it does, and the government will probably get angry at you and take some stuff away from you, and your job is just to soldier on. But I think it very quickly becomes super difficult to just soldier on through that. And so I think then the only option we have as believers is to rely on God as our provider and protector and those kinds of things, and to put our trust in His promises and what He's done for us, rather than what the government is able to do to us in this life.
I think another option, not to as a contrast to what you just said, but maybe in addition to what you just said, is to just leave. And the reason I bring that up,
if you can,
while you can, right? Because Jesus warns in the Olivet Discourse, or I think it's Matthew 24. Jesus warns that when you see these things start to happen, you need to get out of Jerusalem because things are going to go really badly. And you know, if this article, the things that it's saying are true, and you combine that with the fact that they have cameras everywhere, the state, in cities anyway, is in a constant state of looking for you among other bad actors. And you know, Paul did the same thing. So, I don't know. I think a lot of people would say, oh no, you need to stay and be an evangelist where God has planted you. But even Jesus and Paul don't seem to have that kind of a standard. So, and I mean, not to say that it's like, this makes it completely easy. Like, oh, just move your entire life. That's obviously not easy, but I would hope that we're not holding people to a higher standard than Jesus and Paul are, and that we're encouraging them to exercise wisdom. And if they feel like they need to get out or move or, even just do fewer interactions in the city, these are all reasonable things to do.
Yeah, for sure.
And not that you guys were holding them to that standard. It's just, I could see somebody making that case.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's fair.
I was going to pose the question that is it biblical, is it reasonable to do the opposite method as well? Thinking of the two examples of bad people that the article and the video proposed, one of them was an investigative journalist who is kind of writing about the corruption in the government, and the other one was a human rights activist who I don't think it specifically said what he was doing, but speaking out for human rights and therefore against in his mind against what is going on here. And so what degree would it be reasonable, if at all, for Christians not to just continue living their life trying to maintain the highest social credit ranking they have while still being faithful to God, but instead just kind of embracing the low credit ranking, like it sounds like these guys are doing, and expressing their feelings toward the sentiments or towards their feelings toward the social credit ranking as against their freedom to be Christian?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it can be reasonable. I think the difficulty is in saying that you're ethically compelled to do one or the other, to flee or to stay. Yeah. I think for most people who have a family, you're probably ethically compelled to flee. But for people who maybe don't have a family or maybe have a family who's very willing to go along with it, And if you see, because this is the other side of it, do you actually see a reasonable chance of success? Because otherwise it's just suffering for suffering's sake. It's kind of asceticism sort of thing. So, but if you think you have a reasonable shot and, you know, there's like no compelling reason you don't have, especially like if you had children who need healthcare, and you're just essentially saying, oh, I want to fight this cause rather than provide for the people that God has put in front of me. I think that can be reasonable, but I don't think anybody's compelled to it. Mm-hmm.
And I guess the hard thing is knowing how many people are in the group of people who are single or who are sort of downgraded, because I'm assuming if you sort of started like a Downgraders Anonymous support group or something, where the people with bad credit ratings got together and planned how to overthrow the government, that they would crack down on all that sort of thing pretty quickly as well. So, I mean, I would even imagine that too many, you know, as soon as they start to see too many red flag bad credit rating people meeting together, that's going to be a problem. So, and I don't know how much they're monitoring communications and all that kind of thing. So whether you can do stuff via email or text message or all that kind of thing, but I would imagine there's probably some censorship and surveillance going on in that area as well. So I think I agree, you know, if it's possible and it's reasonable and it seems like you've got, like that's actually a valid option. But if that's going to put other people in danger, like your family members and stuff like that, then yeah, probably fleeing is probably the better option. It's so hard though, like unless we're living in this situation, actually know on the ground what it's like, it's hard to make a call on that.
But yeah,
so the last question I want to ask for this time is, can American Christians do anything to help out? For example, if they are fleeing, you know, we could perhaps somehow support them in fleeing, or of course, there's prayer. We can be praying for them. Do y'all have any other examples of ways that we as American Christians hearing about brothers in persecution, and really could be anywhere in the world, how we can help them out?
Well, I'm not an American Christian, so there's that.
Sorry. My bad.
I agree. I think prayer is probably the most straightforward thing we can do, and maybe the best thing we can do in some ways. It's obviously like a spiritual form of support. If we can offer practical support in some, then we should do that. That's going to be pretty hard, I would imagine, sort of remotely for people who aren't involved in some way on the ground in these countries. If they come to, like, so if Chinese people are fleeing to America, for example, and you meet them, then sure, you can you know, look to support them and help them try and sort of establish themselves, and we've seen that in my country. You know, we take in some refugees. A lot of people would say Australia doesn't take in anywhere near enough. And so there's always things I think we can be doing to help out people who are, I guess, the alien in our society, the people who are new or are struggling, and those kinds of things. And that is something that, you know, without becoming social justice warriors and getting into that whole liberal left thing, that is something that we as Christians can be looking out for and getting involved in. But I think prayer is something we can do anytime, all the time, regardless of where we're situated and who we know, and those kinds of things. So if we know these things are going on, we should be praying for these people.
I think another way that Christians might be able to help is by not making the problem worse. And I guess that goes both for in our own country, like not working on projects that have an unreasonable amount of surveillance so that we never get to this point. And then also, like, I know there were a lot of employees that recently left Google because Google wanted to make a Chinese censored Google. I could see the potential for Christians to be in the spot to be creating something that is helping China do these things, because they make all our chips and we make all their software. So questions of, well, it's not wrong to make things for China, but is this thing going to be used ethically? And if not, should I be on board with that?
I think that makes sense. Definitely not. All right. I think those are great ideas, and I think it would be helpful to keep a watch on what's going on. And yeah, I think continue watching it, not just with kind of an abstract curiosity of what could happen and what this means. But yeah, always remembering that those are real people there. Many of them are brothers and sisters, and be praying to God for them. And continuing to consider how can we help out despite being all over the world.
And if you would like to contact us, you can join our Slack team in our workspace, which is like a group on slack.techreformation.com. You go there and you'll find out how to sign in. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Tech Reformation, or you can visit our website, techreformation.com, to look through our past shows. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. And I ain't looking back. No, no, I ain't looking back. No, no, I ain't looking back. No, 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 I ain't looking back. I made my choice, and I ain't looking back. I think I didn't say hi, Craig. Hi, Craig.
Hey, David. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. You have the cleanest video signal of anybody here, and you're in Australia.
How about that? We have a national broadband network, and I'm on it, so maybe that's doing what it's supposed to do.
A socialist what now?
Yeah, basically. The government took over internet.
So do you have to have a certain credit score to get on the internet?
Nope, you just have to. Where I live, you know, in my particular housing development, you have to be on a particular provider. There's only one choice.
Oh, interesting.
Like, that's kind of how it is in America, but not by choice.